everyone. Welcome. We are taking over the 7-Point Highlander cast for today. We're going to talk about some data analysis. My name is Angus Mackay, and I'm joined here by Graham. How are you, Graham?
I'm pretty good, thank you. Very excited to be here. We're just following up on the recent Canbrawl number 2 event that happened up in Canberra. Shout out to Pat from Pat's MTG Bazaar for that. The event happened on the 18th of November and there were 63 players. What can you tell me about it, Angus?
I think a really big part of it and something that gets us excited about data analysis is that it is a kind of large sample size. We see in most tournaments in the past. I think if you're talking about like 40 players plus, you're like, whoa, that's kind of big. Pat's first Canbrawl was 70 players, which was huge. You're getting kind of close to like all time greatest. I think we had a CanCon that was just shy of 100. And that was like probably one of our biggest ones. So if you ever reach that 3-digit mark, you're good. But 63 players, that's huge.
Absolutely massive, and this is important information to be having before CanCon itself comes up next year. There's mm-hmm. two pieces of power for first and second place, so I'll tell you that I am excited to go and try and win that one myself.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll be playing as well, so perhaps I'll see you on the battlefield then, but not before we go through this wonderful data and see what we can glean from it to help us in the future. To start us off, probably like a good thing to start us off with is top eight lists. So we had a pretty diverse top eight, at least by Australian 7-Point Highlander standards. We very rarely get a time, I feel, where there's one or two decks dominating the top eight or one or two decks dominating the meta. We've seen that a little bit in the recent past with Lurrus Breach, but for now I see three Jund decks, and I see a Jeskai Tempo deck, and I see an O3 Animator deck, and I see a Prowess deck, and I see a Grixis deck, and I see a Grixis Oracle deck. So besides the fact that we saw three Jund lists in the top eight, everyone else was bringing their own lists.
Yeah, like the only thing that I would really look at here is that there is still that prominence of red-based decks still taking over the metagame at the moment. The Jund decks, I think, all have Minsk and Boo. They probably have Ragavan in there as well, just depending on the exact makeup. And it's just showing that it's still one of the most powerful colors that you can have to support whatever your game plan is.
Yeah, and we've seen that in like pretty recent history as well, with the sort of uptick of even two color sort of Moonshine, Eclipse, even like Blue Red of Blue Moon has been around, of course, for quite some time. But we see this natural flow when people want to play four color decks, and when Yorion's good, and when Omnath is good. You know, people want to bring their Blood Moons back, and I think that Red is a really powerful color, and I think Blood Moon is like a big part of that. So it's interesting to see. It's interesting to see people shy away from the traditional sort of blue control-y mid-range decks for this event.
Let's take a look at the bigger picture here of the archetypes that we had. So of the decks that showed up, we had 25 people playing mid-range, 10 on combo, 11 on aggro, and then 5 on control, 8 on tempo, and 4 on prison decks. Obviously, we mentioned that 3 Jund decks did make the top 8. That was out of 4 in total, so that's a massive 75 conversion rate into the top 8. The other decks that we saw a lot of were Red Black Eclipse in the mid-range. There was 4 Blue-Red Prowess decks and 6 Mono-Red decks as well. And then just a scattering of the rest of the things. Anything else that stands out to you?
No, I think it's it's a bit of fun. We had 4 Grixis mid-range, I think there was maybe like one or two cards different between those 4 lists. That was a group called Bus Stop, of course referencing the famous Canberra Bus Stops. So all their decks was called Bus Stop Grixis, which is a very sweet name. But out of those 4 players, who are quite competitive usually, they thought that Grixis Midrange was the deck to bring. One of them, Jim Wilkes, did make it into the top 8, which was quite nice. But the other 3 were not far behind him.
Yeah, well, I had a look through that deck list myself, and it feels really reminiscent of the old Kes Pyle decks that used to be prominent in Melbourne, and it's just straddling the divide between mid-range and control, I would say. There's definitely that mana drain, get a big creature out kind of, and protect it with lots of removal kind of game plans you've got, but it's just shifted down a little bit because you need to be able to deal with the fact that we do have a lot more aggressive decks, and especially the Eclipses and the Moonshine decks, which you're getting down the three drops on first turn, and you just need to make sure you have a way to deal with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a big winner of this event was soft counter spells. You mentioned before there was six copies of Red Black Eclipse, which is just Rakdos mid-range, and it as you mentioned, like a lot of people are really trying to play a little bit of ramp turn one, and then turn one or turn two put down a three drop, whether it's Magus of the Moon or Blood Moon, as we mentioned before, or even Goblin Rabble Master. So I can imagine people believing that the counter to those was sort of soft permission, where if you're like dazing it, it feels a lot better because your opponent maybe discarded something to Mox Diamond or is going to have to sacrifice their City of Traders next turn. So that seems to be a pretty wise choice. It's interesting. I think that two of the Jund players out of the four who brought Jund to the table were in the same play group as well, perhaps even more than that. So you can definitely see some theorizing happening from our more competitive players, and that's where you sort of see that bunch of decks that are really similar to each other, with the exception of that. Six red black Eclipse. I know that two people brought Red Black Eclipse as a team, and then I think the rest of the, I'm almost positive the rest of the other four were just a smattering of people who just liked that deck and wanted to bring it. So it is interesting to see what teams are bringing, but it is interesting also to see what people individually thought was a good idea to bring to the table.
Well, just looking at the Red Black Eclipse deck itself, one of the reasons that it is so good is that it only has one or two expensive cards. So it's got the Mox Diamond and it's got a Badlands in there. But for the most part, it's very affordable. And if you compare it to the four color mid-range decks like Omnath or Lurrus, for example. And so it's a great budget check deck for your first try. Similar to that, the mono red deck that I mentioned with six copies, four of those were actually 8-point lists. And so that's the next thing I wouldn't mind looking at, would just be where's our budget option going? Because this is something that we've been trying to introduce into the format to say, hey, maybe you don't need to spend the big bucks. Maybe you can come in here and do something a little bit more budget friendly and still be successful with that extra point that you get access to. And we even managed to have one of the players make top eight with an 8-point list, and that was the O3 Animator list.
Yeah, really. It's interesting, these 8-point lists. For those who don't know, and as Graham sort of alluded to, at the beginning of the year, I believe, or early in the year, or late last year, we had an accessibility rule that said if you weren't playing any reserved list cards, you could play 8 points instead of 7 points, which is kind of huge, especially for mono red. And as you said, that's like a pretty 4 out of 6 of the mono red decks were 8 points. It does make you think what small changes can I make to my deck to get that extra 8th point? Unfortunately, in regards to the results, we did see that top eight result, which was really nice. 13, 24, 25, 23rd. So four people in that kind of 4-2, 3-3 range were playing 8-point lists. So it's pretty good. And then we have 41st, 44th, 47th, 49th, 50th, 58th, 62nd. So you see sort of going down on that other side with that 7-8 point lists on that other end of the curve. I think something that's probably worth mentioning is it's a very popular option for newer players as well. And so I mean not to, I wouldn't want to offend anyone, of course, to say that it might skew the results that some of the 8-point, the 7 or so 8-point lists that are in the bottom end of the results from the from Camberwell too, but it is really interesting to see one in the top eight. It's not the first time. Last Camberwell we had a mono white we had a mono red deck in the top eight. And that mono white list was very close, but I believe was playing Mox Diamond. So I have to go back and check that. But it's really nice.
It does seem like it's like a fairly decent spread across the course of where the deck's faced finally. The other thing I'd just look at is the type of deck that you can actually play if you're on top, if you're on 8 points, because losing that access to jewels and having to play shocks means that you're sometimes playing from behind with your life total, and so there is a skew towards combo and aggressive decks to make sure that you're not playing from behind and that you're able to maintain your board advantage to match the style of deck that you're playing.
Yeah, hilarious that and that's so true. You do not want to go long in a game against an opponent when you have a modern mana base. You know, if you're shocking in, you've got your godless shrines and stuff, like this is not something that you want to dawdle with. So I can definitely appreciate that sentiment that you want to have a lot of cheap and fast decks in those top eight lists. I think it's really funny, this O3 Animator list really like piqued my interest. I've played O3 Animator before in the past, but Jacob, he went fully five color. He wasn't shying away from the challenge. And with his point set being Force of Will, Imperial Seal, Vampiric Tutor, Enlightened Tutor, Oath of Druids, that's like a really, really nice point spread. Imperial Seal recently going down from 3 to 2 points, but you have a bunch of these like one mana top deck tutors, which in most instances is pretty bad. But when you're putting Oath of Druids on top of your deck, and you want to do it as effectively and as quick as you can, this is a really great way to do it. And you're like, and you're getting that Force of Will, or you're getting that Enlightened Tutor because you decided to take the challenge and play with no reserve list cards. So very impressive to see a five color list. Yeah, very impressive to see a five color list in the top eight, and especially with all those Blood Moons in the room, but also with that sort of painful mana base. You don't often see 8 point lists that are more than two colors, because it gets a bit harder to build your mana base after that.
Absolutely. From here, what we'll do is just have a look at the most recent points changes and have a look at how the individual cards were doing there, and we'll also have a glance at the watch list as well. The committee has mentioned recently that one of the things that they've been trying to do is give some power back to more traditional draw go or slower control decks in opposition to the blue based tempo decks. And the most recent thing we've seen to try and encourage that was a move of Mana Drain going back up to one, since deciding that it was a little bit too powerful at zero. And then they've given back Mystic Sanctuary at zero. And so that's ended up with five copies of Mystic Sanctuary, with one of them converting through to top eight, I believe, in the Grixis deck. I would need to check to be certain. But that definitely does sound like it's achieving its aim. It's still something where you need to do quite a bit of build around on that Mystic Sanctuary in order to get the full value there of being able to play it without distorting your mana base too soon.
Yeah, it is a deck building restriction. I mean, it feels really free at 0 points, but no, you have to be a deck that wants to have four lands, by the way. You know, that's not all decks in the format. And I would dare say that it's maybe even like half the decks want to get to four lands, but also have them all be islands. Like you have to make deck building considerations. Maybe you're not playing that Hymn to Torak. Maybe you're not playing that Voidwalker, Liliana. You know, there's all these decisions that you have to make if you do want to play Mystic Sanctuary. And it's not impossible. And I mean, most Gush sort of decks will also want to play that Mystic Sanctuary. But it's nice to see Mystic Sanctuary sort of get a good, decent amount of play at 0 points. It was a really nice sort of elegant, I think I said at the time, way to point a way to let control have those points while still taking back mana drain, because for those of you in the know, we had mana drain at one point for, I think it was just one quarter. So it was one points rotation. They trialed it at 0 points. Everyone played it, and then it went back to 1 point. And I think the Mystic Sanctuary and the Mystical Tutor going down to zero was sort of a way to sort of apologize for, I suppose.
Mystical Tutor is in a very different place. It's definitely aimed more towards the combo decks, I would say, than the traditional control decks. And we saw a few copies of it did show up, so there was three in the event. Some of the points changes that were meant to hit the initiative decks, Mitsk and Boo up to 2 points and Ragavan up to 2 points, still saw quite a bit of play. So there was 20 copies of Ragavan and Mitsk and Boo had 10 copies. Now three of copies of Mitsk and Boo did get through to top eight, and those were all in the three Jund decks that managed to convert there. So sounds like Jund is still getting some value here despite having to get some extra points added to that deck. And then finally, the last card in the Winds of Eldraine update was the One Ring, and there were 7 copies of that in the event, but none of them managed to convert.
Which I think is probably pretty good for, I think it's probably good for the numbers. Like, One Ring was also, again, really, really popular. And because it's obviously colorless as well, there's extra value to that. But to see it still have seven players, that's you know, that's 10% of the field playing the One Ring. I think that's probably where we want to be with the One Ring, making it just 1 point, just so there's some sort of reason why you should do it. And you mentioned it as well, Ragavan going to 2 points on the Wilds of Eldraine update. Still 20 players playing Ragavan. That's you know, we said seven was 10%, so 20, you know, nearly a third of the field playing that amount, and that's huge. And to see one in the top eight as well, pretty interesting. So Mitsk and Boo, 3 copies in the top eight. Ragavan, 1 copy in the top eight. Mystic Sanctuary, 1 copy in the top eight. Mana Drain, 1 copy in the top eight. So still, like, you can still see the conversion rates there, and it's nice to see that these cards are still getting played, even though they've just been pointed more.
After that, we had a more recent update on the 12th of November for Lost Caverns of Ixalan. So I think this is a little bit harder to judge how it went in the event, because it was only been a week since it had been announced. So it's a little bit hard to say exactly how the decks had changed, because people might still be experimenting and not wanting to make such a drastic change immediately before an event started. The two changes here, though, was there was Gamble plus 1-1. Ended up that nobody actually played that in the event, though. And the second one that we had was Green Sun's Zenith went down to 0, and 10 people ended up putting that in their decks. And obviously there's a skew there towards the green-based mid-range decks. So it's stuff like Abzan and Jund and Bant that were playing that in the mid-range formats, and one copy of that managed to convert to top 8 there in a Jund deck as well.
Yeah, interesting to see 3 copies of Jund in the top 8. Only two of them, only one of them deciding that Green Suns of Zero was worth playing. So I think that's probably good data for Green Suns. It's just like pretty similar to the One Ring. It actually performed a little bit better than the One Ring, where it had 10 copies in the entire event. Gamble, a little bit more cut and dry. I think the only people playing Gamble was Lurrus Breach decks, sometimes Reanimator, and then lands, and there were no lands. There was no lands deck at the event. There was only one Breach player at the event, and obviously if you're playing Breach and Lurrus and Intuition, it's a little bit harder to justify a gamble at 1 point. So it seems that the one Breach player decided that gamble was not worth it, and yeah, we saw 0 copies in the event.
Yeah, well, the change to gamble was very much targeted, as they said in the points announcement, and if there's no copies of Breach showing up, then it's a little bit harder to see exactly what has happened there. So let's just finally move on to the watch list. We've got 3 cards currently on the watch list, being 4th Eolingus, Spellseeker, and Mental Misstep. So there was two copies of Spellseeker in the event. None of them managed to convert. The Grixis deck, the Grixis Oracle deck, I should say, was electing not to play it in this case. For Theolingus, there were six copies there. One of them managed to make it through. I personally have been having a lot of fun with that card in Omnath Midrange. It's just very powerful if you can get a lot of mana to sink into it. And then finally, the big controversial one, which is Mental Misstep, which had 44 copies in the event, and all of the decks in the top eight were playing it.
Yeah, so we're playing with 59 card lists here in the top eight. Mental Misstep, 44 out of 63. Like we're talking two-thirds of the field now. We're talking like a lot of people were playing Mental Misstep. The consideration, and then eight out of eight in the top eight, yeah, as you said, which is kind of huge. This is like a pretty similar, we're talking about like Gitaxian Pro Brainstorm sort of level card where it may not see any play at one point, but it's just so ubiquitous. And we can see in the data for this event as well, as we get deeper, it was the most played card. And I think that's kind of funny when you're talking about 46 copies of Scalding Tarn, 45 copies of Bloodstained Mire, and then 42 copies of Mental Misstep. Like you're like, actually it beat out Lightning. It didn't beat out Lightning Bolt this time, which is like pretty unusual, but the most played out of all cards that are non-lands are Lightning Bolt with 43 copies, Mental Misstep with 42 copies, and then you move down a little bit and then you get Fable of the Mirror Breaker coming in third with 33 copies, Fury, Brainstorm, Orcish Bowmasters, you know the drill.
Yeah, like it's Hawkish Bowmaster's a little bit of a new one, but other than those fetch lands, it's definitely much the usual suspect that we're seeing up there. The Lightning Bolt being the most played unpointed card there is once again pointing to what I said earlier of there being just a red shift of red's the best supporting color, and that just happens to be the best burn spell that you can play in red. And so the kind of decks are reflecting that, whereas Mental Misstep is just one of the best free counter spells. And I think the committee is going to have a really hard decision with the points change that is coming up, because it's not so much that it's going to completely remove it from the format, but it makes it a much harder card to play. And it also means that some of the more broken turn ones are going to be left alive. So
absolutely, there's this like weird cascading effect where the really expensive cards, and we hear we've heard sort of murmurings as well about so just a quick correction, we said Mental Misstep is 42 copies and then said 44 copies, so I can confirm with you that it is 44 copies. So yeah, so beat out Lightning Bolt by one, 44 copies of Mental Misstep in the whole event, 43 copies of Lightning Bolt in the event. So it's kind of interesting in regards to like, well, we're not having this conversation about Lightning Bolt, we're having this conversation about Mental Misstep. But there's this weird cascading effect with pointing Mental Misstep that I'm sure the committee is aware of and they're thinking about, and it comes into the conversation where like all of the other pointed cards that are one CMC, like, they're heavily affected by this. Because, you know, if you're playing A-Call at 5 points and it gets Mental Misstepped, you kind of feel a bit silly. But if there's, like, three Mental Missteps in the whole event, maybe you feel a little bit better about playing A-Call at 5 points.
Yeah, like, the two things that I would look at here is, firstly, modern design of Magic by Wizards means that there is more power going into the earlier plays, and it's just obviously a really good stopgap in order to deal with the fact that that power is keep cascading and going downwards to lowest mana values. And then the second thing is, who is going to be playing this as a pointed card if it does end up going to one? And to me, I think it really becomes a combo card instead, and it just acts as a free piece of protection against discard, against spell pierce and other one mana counter spells that they would otherwise have to deal with. And I think that becomes its new home if it becomes a pointed card.
Yeah, and that's fine. It's like, I'm still not even entirely sure myself which way I want that to go, because I do feel like it will be nearly zero. If you decide to like zero play, if you decide to put it to one, but also it's kind of the only place that you can play that sort of card, you know? So like, I want to take them in, and coddle them a little bit. But, if you think about, Mental Misstep being 44 copies and, Gitaxian Probe in like, and like Gitaxian Probe is very similar. It's had a very similar sort of history in other formats. And there was only 24 copies of Gitaxian Probe in Cambrel 2. So kind of interesting in that point, because Gitaxian Probe feels way more free than Mental Misstep. It even draws you a card, you know. But more than 20 people who are playing Misstep decided that they didn't want to play Gitaxian Probe as well. So I think if you're talking about Gitaxian Probe at 44 things, it might be... people might not worry about it. They might talk about that argument that I just mentioned where, well, you know, you can't play it anywhere else, blah, blah, blah. But like Misstep, it just has a different feeling to it. I think a lot of counter spells are the same, where it feels worse to have your spells countered than for someone to have a look at your hand, I suppose. So I think there's definitely an emotional part of that Misstep to one. And that's fine, of course. But the data is not reflective in the same way as it is with Gitaxian Probe, which is only seeing 24 copies.
Yeah, well, the next change is until after CanCon, so it's going to remain here for the time being, but we'll see what ends up happening there anyway. So one thing we wanted to look at was just the performance of previously ranking decks in top eights amongst our recent decks versus how it looked in this event. So really there's been four decks in the last year or so which have been doing consistently well across multiple events. That's going to be Lewis Breach, Jund, Omnath Walks, and Blue Red Prowess, sometimes splashing green or white. So obviously we did see the Jund in the top eight, and Prowess definitely showed up in numbers at the event despite not converting. We didn't, however, really see any of the Lewis Breach decks or the Omnath Walks deck. What would you say would have led to that, Angus?
I'm kind of like pro Acol Time Walk to four. I've been sort of tooting that a little bit. Walks, I was like, well, you know, at least there's like Omnath Walks, which is like pretty normal occurrence to see. But we saw only a few, I think we only saw one Omnath, if I'm not mistaken. No, two Omnath mid-range in Cambrel. Neither of them were playing Walks, and only one player was playing Acol. Two players were playing Acol as well. So it's kind of like, it seems to be at that 5 points, people are still tossing up whether or not it's even worth it to put in their deck. It's kind of interesting to see Omnath forego the time walk. So I know that most of the time, if an Omnath walk deck is in the room, it's like, it might even be you, Graham, because it's like you're a you know, you're an Omnath walks enjoyer. But I think those 5-pointed cards, it's mostly just the people who already have those cards and want to play them, as opposed to people saying. And we saw a really nice deck tech from Violet in our coverage of Cambrel, but what she was saying was you want to find the cards that aren't overpointed and that are maybe even underpointed, and you want to like abuse them and stuff. And no one is thinking, no one's going out of their way to get an Acol and a Time Walk. And I think that's like a really far call from when Acol and Time Walk went to five initially. Because it was like Rug Summer, everyone was playing Rug, and most of those Rug decks were playing one or the other, either Acol or Time Walk. So since then, like Ragavan wasn't any points, Minsk and Boo hadn't been printed yet, Ren and Six wasn't a point, you know, Uro was one, Oko was one. Like this is a time where that Rug deck is probably like 16 points now. You know, it's maybe even double the amount of points that it was when it started. So I think not seeing those high power cards is more of a sign that we're seeing people who want to spread their points out a little bit further so they can see them more often.
Yeah, the other thing that I would look at in just missing these two decks in the event is that there's a definite player bias. I know Omnath Walks has been heavily championed by myself and Michael Billinghurst, and we're based in Melbourne and not always able to travel, and is not seen as much outside of that. And like a lot of those big top aiding events have been done by me, and the same with Lewis Breach and Brennan Crawford and two or three other players have been the main contributors to those statistics up there as well.
One thing that we do see, and I think this might be a Sydney influence thing as well, the events that we're talking about, there's a Canberra event, there's a Sydney event, there's a Canberra event, there's a Sydney event, there's two Melbourne events. Like we are heavily, I mean, we're always going to be East Coast biased. I think that's just where most of our player base is. But what we see that's, I think, a very Sydney thing is seeing lots of Jund as well. So we saw three Jund decks. That was like the big sort of winner at Camberwell. But even in the past, we had another Jund, we had another Jund deck in the previous two events prior to this one, and then in total, eight. So in the last nine big events, there was 10 Lurrus Breaches and eight Jund, and then seven Omnath Walks. So you mentioned before there's like a player bias where we see more Omnath Walks when we're in Melbourne and places that, you know, Billinghurst and Graham travel to. But the thing that I think is probably has the widest amount of players is those Jund decks. I mean, I knew Lurrus Breach was being piloted as well by a very small amount of people, in mostly Melbourne as well. So it's just interesting to see where the player bias is, of course. But those power levels, I don't think they lie. Like Lurrus Breach, Jund, Omnath Walks, Red White, huge. Big event, a big decks, and really important to look out for.
One thing that I've seen as well is in terms of the top eights, Blue Red Prowess has a lot of different players who are getting those good results with it rather than a consistent spread. And I think it's just being played in a higher volume to the other decks because it's a lot easier for people to get access to those cards, and it's got a fairly high floor as well, but just the raw power of the cards can get you over the line instead of having to, well, practice for months on end to get the perfect setup for how your deck needs to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the percentage points you get from having a deck you know and like and are good at, I think, is obviously really important. I think before we sign off, I'd love to talk about some sort of winners and losers in regards to points now that we're here. in Camberwell, and that's the only sort of points extended points data I have in front of us. As we mentioned before, Gamble, zero copies, but also Library of Alexandria, which will surprise no one, 0 points. Merchant Scroll, 0 points. Profane Tutor, Time Twister, Demonic Tutor, Flash, Mox Pearl, Mox Sapphire, Black Lotus. These are all cards that saw zero play. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're overpointed. It definitely doesn't mean that they're underpointed. But I think something to consider here is the sort of bad-ish, I guess I'll say all tutors because Demonic Tutor is in there as well, but like Gamble, Merchant Scroll, Profane Tutor, Demonic Tutor, these are all like cards that were, you know, icing on the cake or whatever, and Gamble only very recently, but I think you'll find that even previously, not many decks would want to play it, but it's decks that really like those tutors. And then you see the sort of other side of this, where you see Pearl and Sapphire and Black Lotus, which are the pieces of power, Time Twister as well, which is pieces of power that saw 0 points. Black Lotus, I think you're just very rarely going to see one, and that's okay. Mox Pearl at zero was kind of interesting. I didn't see many people. I mean, no one brought a Pearl. Mox Sapphire is a little bit more interesting. Sorry, a little bit less interesting because Mox Sapphire is probably the sort of weakest of the Moxen. But something here that I'd like to maybe get your opinion on is Flash at 0 copies in the event. I'm wondering if you heard any sentiments from players or any sort of findings from players, because I know since the Lord of the Rings set came out, people were really interested in picking up that Flash Hulk combo again, but no one decided at Camberwell to give it a go.
Yeah, like Flash still has its extreme power that it always has. There was two copies of it at Pat's birthday ball down in Melbourne recently, and both of them did pretty well. I think they were both 4-2 in a 6-round event, and didn't manage to make the top eight, but it can still do things on turn two, which make your life very, very difficult in terms of trying to win the game. And there's just a lot of protection inherent in the Samwise Gamgee combo that it's just able to protect itself really easily with that extra CMC that it has access to when you go off with the Hulk on it.
Yeah, it really surprised me when I had it happen to me because you make a bunch of food and then the food gives you like multiple opportunities to sack the cat. So you can do it in response to graveyard hate, but you also, as you mentioned before, you get that extra CMC of value, and usually people, I've seen people put it into Sylvan Safekeeper so they get the shrouds. So you protect yourself from creature removal, you protect yourself from graveyard hate. It seemed really resilient, so I was definitely quite surprised when I saw zero copies in the event. Otherwise, the only thing that I wanted to point out was Mox Diamond's play record, so 10 copies. And I'd love to see how that compares to previous events, but 10 copies in the whole event of for Mox Diamond. Something that we see pick up in play. I don't know what happened or what changed, but I think around the time when Red White Initiative started, people just started saying, "Damn, Mox Diamond is not just for lands decks, you know. It seems to be something that you can slot in nearly anywhere."
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that we've been seeing quite a bit of is the Lord of the Rings land cycling cards. So Lorien Reveal being the big one for the blue decks, along with Troll of Akazic Doom. There's been some play patterns of discarding them to land cycle and getting them back with Reanimator. And the secondary thing is it's just really, really good at playing around Blood Moon. It just gives you access to a basic exactly when you need it, and it's colorless to do it. So it's just been a really big strength add to the decks that need that little bit of extra protection against Blood Moon.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that. It's really, really, really telling. 20 copies of Reanimate in the event. Two Reanimator decks, 20 reanimates. That's some interesting numbers for sure.
And yeah, I know a few people have mentioned that the strength of that turn one discard Troll of Akazic Doom, turn two reanimate it is possibly worth a point there. But I think the problem there is just the strength of reanimate is its ubiquity, and there's still life death, there's animate dead, there's a million different options that it's still gonna have that effect happen even if you end up pointing the reanimate.
Definitely, definitely. And it's interesting that and you mentioned a bunch of them. I think the two that really stand out is Animate Dead and Reanimate, because they target your opponent's graveyard as well. Life Death can only target yours, and then you've got Stitch Together and a couple of other bits and bobs. But yeah, Animate Dead 11 copies, Reanimate 20 copies. I think that shows what you were mentioning before, that 15 people brought Troll of Akazic Doom to the table. And they seem to at least like the idea of reanimating or animating dead, and getting that 1-2 punch. And I mean, Troll is a 6/4 with double menace, triple menace, however you want to say it. That's a quick clock. So it's interesting to see people go down that route. That's all I wanted to go over.
Well, it's been great speaking to you about this. I hope everyone else has enjoyed as well. But otherwise, we're going to sign up. I've been Graham.
This is Angus.
Have a great night.